Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to call this meeting of the Climate and Energy Committee to order. First order of business is minutes from February 5th. Representative Kraft, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Madam Chair, I have. I move their approval.
Great. Any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries and the minutes are adopted. Nice. So we've got a couple of bills on the agenda today. First up is House File 3895. Representative Hansen's joining us. Welcome, Representative Hansen. I will move House File 3895 be laid over for possible inclusion. And I believe Representative Hansen has an author's amendment that's coded A1 in your packets. I will move the A1 to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. With that, welcome, Representative Hansen. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House File 3895 is a transparency bill relating to electric co-ops. The purpose of this bill is to provide some sunshine on policies related to electric co-ops. As I introduced the bill, I've had, you know, a lot of interest in this bill. Some asked, what has a co-op done to you? And I said, nothing. This is not about anything related to my experience with electric co-ops, but it is, I think, as most of you know, I work on trying to update and reform and tweak and polish bills and polish policy. And what this bill does is it brings some transparency to very old law relating to electric co-ops. And I do that in the context of the experience we all went through with COVID, where we've had different ways of participating in meetings. We were virtual here for a couple of years, and then we've been hybrid, and we're still providing the opportunity for people to participate beyond being in person. So what the bill does as amended is it says that a regular or special meeting of the board of directors must be open to attendance by all members of the cooperative, and the board shall provide prior notice to the meetings, not just those that are the larger members. With the author's amendment, based on input I heard, it seemed that subdivision 2 providing, allowing members access to information and allowing access to the member list was a concern. So I have provided that a member, the information under subdivision 2 is still available, but the information in subdivision 3, subdivision 3 is stricken. So that access is not provided to the member list. Now, I want to be clear on the access to information where we say that the members can have access to the documents and information either through the website or both. If you have the printed list at the cooperative's physical location, that is my intent that that is public information available, that someone could take photos of that. I'm speaking about the parts in subdivision 2. Subdivision 3 is gone. Under board elections, this provides for, again, different types of elections where there can be voting by internet. I know that some cooperatives may do this. I've been asked, why don't you just let the membership decide or the board of directors to decide and let the local control occur for those board of directors cooperatives? I think, again, I want to go back to the experience we've all been through with COVID, where we can provide more accessibility and transparency, and that transparency can help lead to better governance. When you have this old law, when relating to cooperatives, member ownership should allow for the members to be engaged. And if they aren't able to attend the meetings, or if they can't easily find out the information, it's harder for the members to be involved and make those decisions in selecting the board of directors who make the decisions on their behalf for the utility, for the electric co-op. And with that, I'll stand for questions. And I think the bill's being laid over, is that correct,
correct,
Madam Chair?
Bill will be laid over. I do think we have some public testimony, and so maybe with that, we will call up Christine Spajenski. I hope I got that right, with Batad Wadena Electric Cooperative. Welcome to committee, Ms. Spajenski. People are working hard on my ability to pronounce last names this week. So,
well, thank you very much. And you actually did quite well. Not many people can do that. Madam Chair and committee members, I would like to say good afternoon and also thank you for the opportunity for me to be here today. I am Christine Spajenski, and I'm actually speaking in opposition of the HF 3895. I'm a clerk of Runenberg Township. I'm a farmer owner and a member of DFA, which is a marketing co-op that markets our milk. I'm also a member owner and a director on the Todd Wadena Electric Co-op Board. All three of these organizations represent a true democracy of grassroots governance. Grassroots governance places shared decision-making power into the hands of local members instead of the higher political offices. At Todd Wadena Electric, we are owned by our members and we are governed by our members. It is our members who take part in the decision-making process of how they want their co-op to operate. Each co-op is unique, and members make decisions based on individual co-op needs. As a member owner, they also have access to bylaws, financial statements, and minutes, just to name a few. They take part in the annual meeting, and they also have the opportunity to attend regular meetings. They also take part in the election of our directors. Members have been managing their co-ops for decades, and it's been working. If they want to make changes, there is a process in place to do so. As an elected director, I have an ethical responsibility to the members I represent. It's my fiduciary duty to put the members' best interest first in all discussions and decisions. It's also my responsibility to protect the co-op assets, member investment, to provide transparency and accountability, to maintain confidentiality when appropriate, and to provide communication back to its members. Our members came together as neighbors and friends, and they created a co-op as a way to invest in their local communities by providing electricity to rural Minnesota. In all honesty and with due respect, I believe that HF 3895 is an insult to the member owners who have been managing their co-ops with success and pride for decades. They don't need to be micromanaged with mandates. They already know exactly what they're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Spajenski. Next on the list, we have Greg Ritterbusch from Conexus Energy. Welcome to committee, Mr. Ritterbusch. Please introduce yourself for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Akam and committee members. I'm Greg Ritterbusch, President and CEO of Conexus Energy. It's a cooperative on the north side of the Twin Cities. In past years' testimony, our voice at this committee has been supportive. But today, as the first time, I'm really testifying against a bill on HF 3895. Cooperative boards across the state have successfully governed the business of Minnesota Electric Supply since the 1930s. They govern and oversee an apolitical, nonpartisan business. Each system has bylaws, policies, procedures decided by their members. Distribution cooperative boards drive results. Our own board oversees rates that are 15% below our adjacent investor-owned utility. Our members experience a five-minute outage once every 3 to 3.5 years, putting us in the top 5% of U.S. utilities and leading the state. And we're an innovative leader greening the grid, and we collaborate and share our practices with others. Conexus board meetings are subject today to large cooperative meeting requirements. And even so, member interest and participation has been de minimis across our 145,000 member accounts. So we do much to transparently make information available to all our members. Go to our YouTube channel. You can find our annual meeting speeches going back over 5 years. Social media, LinkedIn, X, Facebook, blog postings. Our public domain internet site is a cornucopia of information. Member login accesses their confidential detailed home usage, and each member gets an annualized personalized value membership report. Our board governs the enterprise to be member-driven. Discussion is about budget, rates, project approvals, safety, compliance, business performance, resource planning for 100% by 2040. We implement statute and policy. We do not debate them. We achieve business objectives while accomplishing engagement and transparency for interested members. So, with respect to the ideas around Form 990, all 44 Minnesota electric distribution cooperatives already publicly file them as required. HF 3895 addresses another place where we should be posted on our websites, but HF 3895 segregates our distribution cooperatives while not addressing comparable transparency for any other Minnesota utility, their executives, or board members. With respect to board nominations, any Connexus member can apply. After criminal background and other checks, and at arm's length from the board and management, a member nominating committee reviews the applications and interviews them. For any member not nominated, they may still run by petition. 200 signatures, 0.14% of our membership is the requirement. But given the complexity of utility business, we find this modicum of review has engendered a successful board democratically elected from our members. So let me close. I don't have time for other comments, but I want to conclude with something constructive here. I think things were offered in good faith. As a business executive, before I solve a problem, I extensively research and understand status quo. HF 3895 infects what has worked for decades, so please take the time to walk in our shoes. The bill authors for the House and Senate bills and committee members are welcome guests. We've had the Legislative Energy Commission at our headquarters before. Come to an annual meeting. Come to a board meeting. Let us brief you on our relevant bylaws and board policies. Please engage with us before changing what works. Thank you, Madam Chair, for a final opportunity to testify at your committee.
And thank you, Mr. Redbush. Appreciate your leadership. Next on the list, we have Tim Thompson from Lake Region Electric Co-op.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Tim Thompson, easy name, CEO at Lake Region Electric Cooperative, a rural co-op headquartered in Pelican Rapids. Our co-ops are community-based, nonprofit businesses providing electric service across Minnesota. When suppliers refused to bring electricity to rural Minnesotans, local people came together to form co-ops and elected their neighbors to govern the cooperative. These local boards still exist today and are the bedrock for effectively managing co-ops. While we appreciate the amendment to this bill that removed the access to the membership list, we still have concerns with the current version and the overreaching control it has on the governance of long-standing and successfully managed co-ops. By statute, co-ops are governed by a board elected by their members. Instituting new rules with regard to how a cooperative operates erodes the local governance by the boards. Each co-op is unique, and the locally elected co-op boards are best suited to serve the members of the cooperative. The co-op model has proven to be effective for decades. From in-person and virtual grassroots annual meetings and district meetings to energy forums and member advisory committees, and the list goes on and on. I believe we are grassroots at its best. Co-ops already provide for member attendance at board meetings, and it's unnecessary for the legislature to insert itself into the role of managing these meetings. The risk of this legislation include taking control away from members who elect their representatives to make important decisions that affect each of their uniquely situated co-ops. This bill will diminish the effectiveness of vital, locally governed co-ops, and I respectfully ask the committee to reject House File 3895 and protect what is already working. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to be here this afternoon to testify.
Thank you for your comments. And I believe that's the end of public testimony. We will turn to member questions. Representative
Thank you.
Hansen, would you like to go ahead?
Madam Chair, I think there was written testimony that was submitted as well from someone who has a different opinion than what was just presented.
I appreciate you making note of that in your packets, people or members. There, oh my goodness, there's a letter that you can take a minute to look over. I think that would be important. Thank you. And with that, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing this before us. And I want to thank you for your comments about transparency leads to better government. I could not agree more, sir. So thank you for that comment. I also want to thank you for this amendment. However, I still can't support this bill because this amendment still has concerns for me. Before the amendment, I was really concerned. Now I'm still just concerned. I'll explain. Subdivision 5, and originally it had just talked about an electronic cooperative must develop a secure system that maintains ballot secrecy. That's actually impossible. But with the way you've changed this, you've now got three ways to vote for board elections, and you're only requiring that a cooperative must only have at least two options available, correct? I just want to make sure I'm understanding the amendment correctly.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Davis. Yes, if you look on the A1 amendment, it says a cooperative must develop a secure system that maintains ballot secrecy in an election and offer at least two of the following options. It provides three options. So,
yep. Okay. Very good. But
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The problem is if a cooperative does choose voting via the internet, it's impossible to meet this mandate. An electric cooperative must develop a secure system because once you bring in the internet, you do not have a secure system. And so I have a big problem with that. And I just want to clarify again. So we're talking about voting at a computer or via on your phone. We're not talking about downloading a ballot that you go print off and then mail in. We're talking about voting online, actual internet. Okay, yeah, it's impossible to have a secure system. If I just may for a minute here, Madam Chair. So there's a article from NPR that's was just recently updated, September 8th, 2023. So we're talking within the last 6 months here, 7 months here. UC Berkeley security experts are saying that in this article, secure internet voting is still impossible. That's in our day and age. The article also said the advice from cybersecurity experts is clear that widespread internet voting at this point is a bad idea. Now, I know we're not talking about widespread internet voting, but certainly we're in the same ballpark here. I read another article from MIT News. You can find that at news.mit.edu. Now, this is coming from experts out of MIT. They said in recent years there has been a growing interest in using internet and mobile technology to increase access to the voting process. At the same time, computer security experts caution that paper ballots, this is coming out of MIT, paper ballots are the only secure means of voting. And one person in this group, a graduate student of electrical engineering and computer science at MIT, he said, "The consensus of security experts is that running a secure election over the internet is not possible today. Today's software is shaky enough that the existence of unknown exploitable flaws is too great a risk to take." And so with the way that I would just highly encourage you to offer another amendment to get rid of that number three there on line 1.13 of your amendment that we just added in here. So with that being said, thank you, Representative Hansen. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Representative Davis. You know, that's why, contrary to what some of the testimony was, I'm providing an option of two out of the three. So a local co-op could decide to choose voting in person, voting by mail, and not internet. Secondly, those of us who were here prior to 2022 all voted electronically as legislators, right? For 2 years.
Davis, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I wasn't here. And I thought it was a really bad idea. Again, just two things real quick. You can't, if a co-op, a cooperative does this, how are they going to verify who the person at the keyboard is? I mean, my laptop sitting on my desk right now doesn't have a camera on it. And so, boy, you're taking a huge leap of faith right there that the person behind the computer screen is the actual person that's supposed to be voting. And then, again, I'll just point out this. You're giving them three options here. They got to meet at least two. Well, if they pick the option of voting via the internet, you can't meet this mandate because it's not secure. And so it just doesn't belong in the language. Thank you.
Any final comments on that, Representative Hansen, before we go to other questions?
I think I disagree. I think it provides an option.
Great. Next on the list is Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I know we have three representatives from three different co-ops, and they can listen to the question and then see if anyone would like to answer. But I'm just curious as to if the three co-ops that testified, did they have any members ask to vote by mail or ask to vote via internet? And I would just piggyback on the back of what the previous rep said, is that I was here, you were here, and we actually had a very complex system in order to vote. It was a very expensive system. It was a biometric system, so you had to scan finger or thumb, and it had to be, so we had to actually log into a very secure portal that was the same as when we want to do intranet here, and this is getting into the weeds. But while it technically could be possible, it is very expensive for the entire membership of a co-op to do that. I just want to put that out there. And I don't know, do you happen to know, maybe I'll ask the second question since I've got the mic, Representative Hansen, the cost to the legislature to do the biometric scans plus the hardware and software to do that?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Rarick, I do not know that. You know, that's where the, I think if I want to go back to answering the question, I think it was stated it was impossible to do internet voting. And I said, we have done that. There wasn't a qualifier in there on cost.
Representative Berg, did you have any follow-up?
Madam Chair, just wondering if any of the three co-ops want to answer as far as, did they even have any membership asking to vote a different way, whether it be by internet, through, you'd have to do a very secure means like we did. There were 134 of us that had biometric scanners that were hooked up to specific types of hardware and software on our computer so that we had identification.
Looks like Mr.
Oh, good. I talked long enough, so he came down.
Yeah. Please take a seat and go ahead, state your name. Have a seat, yeah. Mr. Ritterbusch.
And you guys take your names.
Greg Ritterbusch. Madam Chair and Representative Rarick, I'll report our experience. We do it two ways, partially because we're such a large system, it's, you know, the old ways, everyone's showing up in the annual meeting and voting just don't work anymore. So I would concur that a pure internet process has security problems. For those that use the internet as a channel to get votes in, we use a proprietary business called Survey and Ballot Systems, and the way it's kept secure is you get mailed a packet, and it has a code, so the person that received it has a unique code. Then you have to come in through whatever internet you're using, log into through a portal, SVS, and then you can be secure. Is all security 100% airtight? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And then the other way that folks can vote, we still have folks who are very traditional, and when we do our annual meeting, they can come in person with the ballot. They got in the mail or get another ballot there. It's everything's checked by member number, and they can vote. So our members are satisfied with that. We haven't had a request for additional ways of voting, and I hope that's responsive to your question.
Representative Rivera, could you have any follow-up before we move on to the next?
Not right now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just more of a general, maybe a comment. I appreciate the idea on this bill, but, I think just in general, by the legislature stepping into this forum of kind of mandating locally elected or mandating two locally elected officials, essentially that's who represent people like me who are a member of Lyon Lincoln Electric. Those folks elect, we come to a meeting, we elect folks to represent us. And I think if it's that dramatic of an issue, that there are currently systems in place through locally elected officials that can pretty much do all of this without kind of the heavy hand of state government coming down and saying, this is what you have to do. If there's some members that have heard from, their co-op saying, I don't feel like my voice is being heard, there is an outlet for that. They can run for one of those board spots and boot someone out that's not doing their job. And, that's the uniqueness of locally elected officials. And, whether it's the state mandates that are coming down from the state government onto the local co-ops or municipalities or whatever, I mean, we're just kind of seeing that it's a habit. And I would argue as a rural member that it's not a good habit to continue this process of eroding locally elected people that are just trying to do the best job they can for their friends and neighbors and their businesses that are in their areas. And, if we can, I kind of think of, this slippery slope, really, of eroding elected governance and the strength in that. Pretty soon, I mean, we're not that far away. We keep doing this over the next 5 or 10 or 15 years. There's not going to be anything left. They're going to be it's not going to be a locally elected board. We'll just have the legislature appoint 6 people from each of these electric co-ops and say, you just have to carry out with whatever we say. You just be yes people. And whatever we want, you just do. Or, we're going to come down with the heavy hand of state government. And I'm guessing there's co-ops, I don't know for a fact, that probably do all the stuff that's in this bill. And that's great. I'm not saying that this bill is bad in the fact, but it said if you just would put one more amendment, that might be good. Instead of saying must, just do can or would be encouraged to or something along those lines that would still allow local elected officials to make some decisions that are best for their people. I get where you're coming from, Representative Hansen. I would say that if you even had one cooperative board that would at minimum say, this is something we could at least look at. Let's chat with you about it. I appreciate the idea. I just would hope that, we can kind of have some sort of a draw, a line in the sand, electric utility pole in the sand or whatever you'd like to call it, of just saying, the state government can do whatever it wants, quite frankly. I mean, we could just say, we're going to put all the rural co-ops into one governing board, and we'll put one legislator in charge of it. We could do that. But we have to say no at some point. And I think this is just one more of those things. It's just, we try to protect our lake shore. We try to protect those things from being eroded away. And that lake shore, kind of, if we want to use an analogy, or shoreline or whatever you like to call it, that shoreline, that lake shore, is local governance. And if the waves of big state government keep crashing in and eroding that, pretty soon there's not going to be anything left. And we're just all going to be sunk. And I would just ask that maybe we just slow this process down and get better engagement and let these things be brought back. Maybe we could say, hey, would you bring this before your board? Would you allow a vote to be happen among your locally elected officials in a board or at your next annual meeting? Do you feel like this is a problem? And because there's going to be real costs here. I mean, my guess is if you have to go through a whole internet voting system and you got web developers and IT people, and that's just going to be whenever we have a mandate on utilities, that's not a, you know, those nasty co-ops aren't going to be the ones bearing that. They're going to pass those costs on to their consumers, on to the businesses that are struggling to compete. And, you know, I would just ask maybe a little pause button, maybe just a little back off, and kind of get the heat of the moment out of the room, and just let's just take a breather on this bill and just maybe pass on it. But
Representative Hansen, do you want to respond?
Yep.
Before we've got four people asking questions and about a little over 10 minutes left. So go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, Representative Swazinski, I liked your metaphor with erosion. I'm looking forward to maybe working on a shoreland erosion ordinance with you. We can find some common ground there and protect it. Members, this whole discussion, I want to bring you back to what? Why are people concerned? Line 1.9, line 1.10, line 1.11. What the bill does is say that a regular or special meeting of a board of directors of an electric co-op must be open to attendance of all members of the cooperative. That is a change from current law, which says that only is required for those that have more than 50,000 members. So I don't see how it's an erosion of democracy. I don't see how it is so concerning that it shakes the very foundation of the rural co-ops to make their meetings open, make their board of director meetings open. And it's not like this is some unknown entity. You know, there's a history with electric co-ops that goes back to the 30s or before. Maybe if Mr. Eliff could mention about how they were regulated before member-owned cooperatives.
Mr. Eliff?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen asked me to look into the history, and I enlisted the assistance of the Legislative Reference Library, who are experts in this area. And what they returned to me was a bill that was only four pages long back in 1978, which was appears to be the first time that co-ops were unregulated in Minnesota and were expressly excluded from the definition of public utility. And as one of the subdivisions in the law says, for the purposes of this section, public utilities shall include cooperative electric associations with respect to service standards and practices only, which is pretty much where we still are today. So before 1978, it appears electric co-ops were treated just like any other utility.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. And so for members, member-owned utilities, member-owned cooperatives, have a say, they need to be able to go to the meeting.
As I said, we have four people left to ask questions, so if we can be brief, please. Representative Igo, you're next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief then, since we're trying to get through this. We've done a lot this legislative couple years here. I think that this is something where we were looking for a problem where there isn't one. I love my co-op. They do a great job, as well as many do across this state. And I think coming in with a mandate and forcing more costs on them when we just got done doing a ton of that is just apropos and unnecessary. So I think the best thing to do would be able to just pump the brakes on this thing, have some more conversations, and actually hear from the co-ops that will have to implement this, and finding out they probably do it all already. So with that, let's just put this aside for now and focus on things that actually matter, and we can get fixed instead of looking for problems when there are none. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Next on the list, Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be very quick. Representative Hansen, I don't view this as a tidal wave of regulation washing away the shore. I look at this as a simple good governance bill that implements many of the things that are already existing in various forms of governance, whether it be HMOs or you name it, school boards, where a lot of these provisions already exist. So, thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. So I guess this probably has more to do with the conversation that was happening early on, but I just want to make sure that we're looking at the bill really clearly, that it says that you have to choose at least two of the following options. So you don't have to do the voting via internet, because I do recognize that that could be prohibitively expensive for individuals, which is why there's voting by mail or voting in person at the co-op's office. And then I also decided to look into like any co-ops that I belong to, including my bank, which is, you know, what are they called? Credit union. Thank you. And they have that as an option. You know, it's not a super sophisticated option. They're like, do you want to attend the annual meeting via Zoom? Send us an email and we will make sure that you can attend the annual meeting and vote via Zoom. And so I don't think that this needs to be excessively expensive, but as a person who's not represented by a co-op, I don't necessarily have a strong opinion on this one way or the other. But what I do want to say is, like, I don't think we need to look at that as something that is, like, prohibitively, you know, impossible to accomplish. And certainly when we think of the regions that co-ops represent, they are a lot bigger, right? It's not St. Paul where you're like, you can get there within 15 minutes regardless of where you are. I mean, if it's a lot larger, then it does make sense for, like, accessibility's sake and just, like, proper representation that there's some way for people to participate other than coming to the co-op's office.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Just real quick, I know just something that popped out, but, you know, it says the bill requires co-ops to be able to nominate a candidate if 40 or more people have petitioned. And is that something, have you talked to the co-ops? Is that something that's not happening already? Or what is that, where did that number come from?
I will say, before I pass it over to Representative Hansen, I believe Mr. Ritterbusch said they have 200 that they use in their co-op. But anyway, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I picked 40 because I thought that was low, but not so low that it was achievable by maybe a very small group of people. Trying to reach 40 people is, and you have the current system where you have nominating committees to try to provide an alternative to having capture by the nominating committee process to the board of directors, have some bypass system where membership alone, and that was why originally I had the membership list in there so that people could contact members so that they could actually see if they could go around the nominating commission.
Okay.
Representative Altendorf, did you have?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. So thank you, Representative Hansen. In the co-ops that I talked to, the ones that I talked to, they could add someone by petition of 10 to 15 members. So it's actually quite a bit lower is what I saw than the number that you put on there. And then just lastly, with all of the extra expenses the co-ops are taking on moving towards the 2040 energy plan that was passed, have we really examined, you know, or maybe I don't know if any of the co-ops want to talk to this, but what is the additional cost that's going to be to them? And is this really where we want them to be spending their money?
We will pass this back to Representative Hansen, and maybe at the same time you can do some closing comments. And I will say the bill is being laid over, so there will be an opportunity for work to continue to be done on the bill. But Representative Hansen, if you'd like to respond and do some closing comments.
I think it is a good question. What is the cost for democracy? Do we put a cost on our democracy? Do we put a cost on participation? Again, the bill in front of you is requiring meetings to be open by attendance. We've had testimony and discussion by members that already there are alternative options out there where people may use mail, may use electronic means of voting. And then we're requiring having basic information about the co-op available to its members in person or electronically. The testimony you've heard and the communication has been, this is a very significant detriment to the co-ops. I find that curious. I think that it is an opportunity to provide transparency, and I look forward to continuing to work with members and boards of directors and the members of co-ops to make this a better bill so we can accomplish those tasks.
With that, I renew my motion that House File 3895 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Next on the docket, we have House File 4155 with Representative Kraft. And as he's getting settled, Representative Kraft, moves House File 4155 be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to committee and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a very simple and practical bill. It's about making it easier for people with ITIN numbers to hook up utilities and to pay their bills. The ITIN number is actually a number provided by the IRS as a way for folks without Social Security numbers to file their taxes. In order to obtain an ITIN, the applicant's identity has to be verified by the federal government. Just as an FYI, 23,000 tax returns in Minnesota were filed with an ITIN. Also in Minnesota, gas, electric, and landline companies cannot deny service if the customer cannot provide a Social Security number. However, many of them appear to not allow an ITIN number, and some may have not allowed it because there's no mention of it in their service application forms. So it's easy for a customer to think it's not allowed. We have residents in Minnesota that currently do not have full access to utility services because they use an ITIN and not a Social Security number, or they may wind up making convoluted arrangements to get utility service. This bill ensures that these residents can simply hook up their utility services and pay their bills while using their ITIN. And with that, I have some testifiers.
Great. Let's see. First on the list, we have Ryan Perez. Please join us at the table. Welcome to committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ryan Perez, and I am the organizing director at Copal, Minnesota. Copal is a member-based organization aimed at improving the quality of life of Latinos in Minnesota. I'm speaking today as well as a member of the One Economy for Minnesota campaign, where we dream of a Minnesota where ITIN holders can participate as equals in the state's economy. This results in healthier, safer, and more stable communities for all those who call this place home. Our campaign is based out of Mankato, St. Peter, and Medalia, Minnesota, places where working Latin American families have made homes since the betabeleros, the beet workers of the early 20th century that came here with their families. Since we launched our campaign this past fall, we've been engaging with property management companies as well as utility companies, verifying their systems are equally accessible to Minnesotans who file their taxes using an ITIN number. Many utilities, including St. Peter's, explicitly ask for a Social Security number on their applications. Asking for a social without an ITIN option can be intimidating for many families. We also heard situations of Minnesota families not providing a social and then being expected to pay an additional deposit, even though they've already established a good credit via an ITIN number. As we advance similar legislation impacting rental applications, we also ask you to pass this language in the interest of uniformity. By making an ITIN a more reliable tool overall, we're continuing to see what our data shows, the tax base of ITIN filers in Minnesota growing year over year, improving the tax base of public resources. As we continue, we find so much excitement for Minnesotans in building a more inclusive economy. Thank you, and I ask you to pass this bill through committee for the benefit of all Minnesotans.
Thank you, Mr. Press. And next on the list, we have Irma Marquez Trapper. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Irma Marquez Trapero, and I am the CEO of Latino Lead. At Latino Lead, we envision a world where Latino community members are civically engaged, connected, and supported, and seen as a vital voice of influence in Minnesota. I want to start by thanking Representative Kraft for your work and leadership in supporting Minnesota families and for authoring this bill. I am here today to support this bill because basic utilities are one of the largest and most impactful necessities in life. And this proposal ensures that all have access regardless of whether they use ITIN or not. Without this bill, and by restricting access to utilities, it makes it difficult or impossible for some of the state's most economically disadvantaged residents to live here. These individuals are facing the risk of living without electricity or other utilities because of their ITIN status. This is a rational and also reasonable solution. And at Latino Lead, we work with a network of Latino leaders, professionals, and businesses. So in addition to this being a call for a more equitable practice, I am also here to voice support of this proposal on behalf of our cross-sector network. One of our network members is Paramount Residential Mortgage Group, or PRMG for short. They would have loved to be here, but due to scheduling conflicts, they weren't able to, but they did send a note for me to read to this committee. This is on behalf of Clinton Rooney. I am an area manager for the PRMG, and I am also founder of Starfish Home Group. I am writing this statement in support of this bill to ensure that Minnesotans who are in ITIN and have access to utility services. Oh, I'm so sorry. Sorry about that. I'll continue. So Starfish Home Group's goal is to help the underserved population with their housing needs by lowering the barriers of entry and including the ITIN in our rental applications. This has been a smart and profitable business strategy. However, we often get asked by our ITIN using tenants for assistance in getting their utilities up and running. This is because most utility services applications ask for a social security number. Companies do this to check for eligibility for service, but also to know, but I also know that you can achieve the same with an ITIN, just like our company does. This proposal makes a perfect sense because my ITIN using tenants and other ITIN users should have the ability to use their ITIN to get basic utility services and pay their bills just like everyone else. So today I urge you to vote in favor of this bill, and thank you so much for your time and consideration.
And thank you for your testimony.
And I also want to call attention to members to a letter in your packet from Ron Elwood at Legal Aid. With that, before we go to amendments, any questions or comments by members? Seeing none, we will go to amendments, and I will just say I try hard to make sure everybody has the space to be able to make comments. I just hope that we can keep the conversation around the purview of this jurisdiction, and go ahead. I believe that there is an A2, Representative Swizinski.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I offer the A2 amendment before the committee. This just speaks a little bit to the point that utility bills are often used as part of the process to register to vote. And this would just simply say if an ITIN is used in the procurement of utility bill, that it would just simply place on there for local governments for just for clarity that utility bill will not be used for voting purposes. That's what the amendment does. It's pretty straightforward. And I think this conversation should be potentially because of the use of utility bills that are placed as part of the voting process, that we should potentially have this conversation also, not just lay it over, but potentially have it in the elections committee just to make sure that if there are any issues that they would be taken care of and that. And you know, that's a conversation we'd like to have just because obviously our purview really is not necessarily elections, but it is utilities here. But I feel like there is some potential that we'd love to have, if there's clarification that could be made, that it would be made in that particular committee, and I'd ask for your support.
And I will just respond to the request for it to go to elections. Because of the amendment today, we did reach out to elections and ask if they were interested in hearing it. At this point, they said they were not, but if it's laid over, that doesn't mean they can't hear it later. So we will have possession of it. And I didn't formally move, or you didn't formally move, we didn't formally move the A2, so.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A2 amendment before the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Any discussion to the A2, Representative Kraft?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Swizinski. So I would urge a no vote on this. So as was clear, this isn't a voting bill. But to the point that you raised, the other things that can be used are, besides phone, TV, or internet, solid waste, sewer, electric, gas, or water bills, banking or credit card bills, rent or mortgage, residential lease or rent agreement valid through Election Day, and a current student fee statement. So I think, you know, focusing on a utility bill when there's all these other things just does not make sense. So I'd urge a no vote.
Any further, Representative Stevenson?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to clarify that when registering to vote, you have to prove two things. You have to prove that you're eligible to vote, and you have to prove that you live where you say you live, okay? A utility bill can only be used to prove the second of those two items. So there's not really a concern here that it would be used to establish that you're eligible to vote. It's about proving where you live. So I don't think this is necessary because a utility bill can't be proved to answer the first question.
Representative Stevenson. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 say aye.
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 Oh, I'm so sorry. Is it by rules? Is it we're already voting?
I'm sorry.
Afterwards, you can make a comment. I'm sorry, Marion. All those in not in favor say nay.
Nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Rarick, I apologize. Would you like to make a comment?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I caught the attention of your wonderful CA who's very attentive just a second too late. I apologize. And yes, you cannot call on me while we're doing a vote, and I fully respect the process. So the question I was going to ask, because we've talked a lot about voting last biennium, and I know this is not an elections committee, but since Representative Stevenson brought that up about establishing your legality of voting, which means you have to be a U.S. citizen according to our U.S. Constitution. So I'm just wondering, since this is on the other side of it, so this is the residency side, have you had any other concerns besides what you've heard here today that this, because this is a very common thing to be used when you go into register to vote when you've moved and you're establishing your residency, but you also have to establish your citizenship. Have you had other concerns come to you as you're crafting this bill, or is it just in here so far? Because I would think that this would be of concern.
Representative Kraft.
Madam Chair, Representative Rarick, first I've heard of a concern like this on this bill.
Any follow-up, Representative Rarick?
Just really quickly, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So when we were discussing that in other committees, I remember very clearly the author of the bill, and I'll just say it really quickly and then we'll move on. But I asked, what is the barrier now to establish the first part, as Representative Stevenson alluded to? And what I was told is that it's only the affidavit, the statement that you have to sign when you sign up to vote to say, I am a U.S. citizen. So I think that what we just voted on was actually impactful, and I would actually hope that we have these discussions in all of those different areas, because the verification of citizenship is so low, it's literally just a signature to affirm that that's what you are. So I think that we should take our elections incredibly seriously, as the previous author, Representative Hansen, talked about how incredibly important it is and that we maintain security of elections. So I would just say that I think that this is a legitimate concern. Particularly utility bills are one of the first things people pull out to establish residency when they go to register to vote in their new city in particular. So or a township or wherever they are, but I think this is a legitimate concern, and I think we should all be very concerned about election security and making sure that those are eligible to vote are voting. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, any closing comments? Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a great bill, simple bill, really practical. I'm excited for it to be included going forward.
Great. With that, Representative Kraft renews his motion that House File 4155 be laid over for possible inclusion, and the bill is laid over. With that, we are through with our business today, and we meet again next Tuesday. I'll see you then.